Hi, thanks for tuning in to season 5 of the Aced It podcast, where we translate science into sense so you can learn about research in the justice and health fields without having to read a lengthy journal article or report. This season, we're trying something new. Interviews. In each episode, you'll hear from top experts working on research within the JCoin network. I'm so excited. It's like you get a glimpse behind the scenes with these fascinating folks as they talk about what they're learning, the struggles they faced in their projects, and what amazing findings they have so far. Findings that will surely make a difference in the lives of so many. It's almost too good to be true. So with that, I'm Danielle Rudes, your host, coming to you from Sam Houston State University in Texas. With ACID, I do most of the work for you. All you have to do is listen. ACID is a cool and super helpful product brought to you by the Center for Advancing Correctional Excellence, ACE, at George Mason University. For more info, check out jcoinctc.org. Now, let's get started. Okay, welcome to another awesome episode of the Aced It podcast. Today, I have the distinct honor of being with Drs. Peter Friedman and Liz Evans, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves because they both have really long and fascinating titles and affiliations, but I want to just thank you both, Peter and Liz, for being here with me. I am super excited to hear about the work you've been doing in Massachusetts. So why don't you both take a second and introduce yourself to our listeners?
I'm Peter Friedman. I am an internal medicine and addiction medicine clinician researcher, a physician researcher at Bay State Health, and the associate dean for research at the University of Massachusetts Chan Medical School, Bay State. I'm a professor of medicine and population and quantitative health sciences at UMass.
Great. Danielle, thank you for having us. So I'm Liz Evans. I'm a professor of public health at the University of Massachusetts Amherst in Western Massachusetts. I've studied addiction for many years, usually taking a life course longitudinal approach. Right now, my position is in a community health sciences department. So it's been great to partner with Peter. We have different background training experiences, but common interests. And that's sort of what brought us here together on our JCoin Hub.
And you can tell we're having a good time.
Okay, thank you so much. Let us dig right in. I want to know first, what were your research questions? Or if that's too narrow, then maybe talk about your project aims. What were you hoping to do in this JCoin project?
We wanted to step back first and talk about our overall Massachusetts JCoin project. So in 2018, the Massachusetts legislature passed legislation and the governor signed it, mandating that initially 5 and then 2 other jails, 7 jails in Massachusetts would provide all FDA approved forms of medication for opiate use disorder. Mm-hmm. And so our JCoin application is really to do what is essentially there was a mandated evaluation from the legislature that the Department of Public Health is doing and is supposed to be doing, but ours is to do a more research rigorous evaluation working with DPH, Department of Public Health in Massachusetts, the Bureau of Substance Addiction Services, and the 7 jails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we were really interested to study, well, what would it take for them to implement medications to treat opioid use disorder inside of the jails? So that's our second aim, really. Our first aim is understanding what would be the outcomes of delivering these medications to folks, understanding who receives which medication while they're incarcerated compared to those who don't receive medication at all, and then following people 1 year after they exit jail to understand who continues to receive medications once they leave jail, and some other outcomes as well, like mortality rate, reincarceration rate, rearrest rate, recidivism. So there's these two aims. There's a third aim, which is understanding the costs associated with delivering a program like this one. So we had this large project up and running when COVID happened. And yes, so just to remind everyone, like we started studying these jails in 2019, in the fall of 2019.
September 1st of 19, all the jails had to start their program.
Right. And so it was only a few months later in March of 2020, COVID happened. And almost immediately, jails in Massachusetts responded. And there were some changes that happened in part because the jails were able to pivot pretty quickly to recognize, well, how should we mitigate the risks posed by COVID with incarcerated populations?
COVID rears its ugly head and disrupts everything that you had going on and everything that was going on inside the jails in your study. Tell me a bit more.
There was a lot of concern in the jails about spread of SARS-CoV-2, given this close quarters. And so there was some compassionate release advocacy going on that folks should be released early. And actually in March 10th of 20, the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts declared, you know, the state of emergency, and the courts sort of instituted a process to release nonviolent persons from jails and prisons, including a lot of folks who were there for drug-related charges. And the question that we were interested in was, we already knew that people released from incarceration are at high risk for overdose, right? That data has been well trod probably in these podcasts. What we were concerned about was a lot of these releases were occurring very quickly without linkage and other things. Did these early releases result in more overdoses during COVID? Was this something that would be sort of a side effect of this compassionate release?
So we were really positioned to answer that question. Like, the need arose, a new question came on our horizon, and we were already working with the Department of Public Health and these jails. So it enabled us to consider, well, how could we go about accessing the data to answer the question of were fatal, non-fatal overdoses different during COVID compared to before COVID?
Okay, so COVID definitely did some damage, I want to say, and it changed things a bit. But in fact, you kind of took the silver lining approach and realized that it also opened up a new opportunity for study too. Is that kind of what you wanted to do?
So what we wanted to do was to use what's called the Public Health Data Warehouse, which is the primary data source that is the source of all of our outcomes. And it's a really sophisticated linked data set that the Department of Public Health in Massachusetts manages, the Office of Special Analytics manages, and they are part of our study team in Massachusetts. And really, it links data from prison releases, social service, hospital discharges, emergency department runs,
addiction treatment,
death, all that. All the data are linked. The problem, however, is that there's a two-year lag till all those linkages, all those data are available and the linkages are done. So we wanted to look at this question more precipitously than that. So we sat down with our colleagues at DPH and our research team and came up with a way to do that.
All right. Yeah. That seems like what you were able to do was both timely and really crucial research. Maybe if I can dig one more time, I'd love it if you'd tell me a little bit more.
Yeah, so we talked with them and they pointed us to their ability to receive data on everyone leaving jail who had opioid use disorder in the COVID time period and also in the time period before. And they could take all that data and link it together to understand overdose experiences using this data set called the Matrix data set and also the vital statistics death file.
Yeah, so Matrix is a data set of all of the emergency ambulance runs, all the ambulance runs in the state. And of course, the death file is fairly straightforward. So we were able to get at least those files to link, but we needed to know who was released from the jails. And we were working very closely with the Bureau of Substance Addiction Services And we sort of came upon a compromise working with them that we would be able to enter our data into a REDCap database, which is a secure, HIPAA-compliant, secure system that we were using to enter data on all of the folks who had opiate use disorder who were identified within these jails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we had data on everyone released, I think, starting from during the COVID era, March of 2020 through August of 2020. So we had a nice cohort of individuals in those months who were released from these jails during that time period. And then we had a pre-COVID time period from about September of 2019 up until COVID occurred, so until March of 2020. So we had these two cohort time periods covered,
right,
which we could then have a comparison, like how did the outcomes of this group that were being released during COVID compare to the outcomes of people who were released before COVID happened?
Right.
So that was a cool opportunity, right, to do such timely research pretty much as it was happening.
That's great. Thank you so much for talking through that stuff with our listeners. I know it seems sometimes like that's the nitty-gritty part, but that's the coolest part of research, I think, is that stuff just happens and we pivot and we do the very best we can, not only for the research, but for the people that are involved. There are real humans in these jails and they're being released to communities during a pandemic. What does that look like for them? What does it feel like for them? I can't tell you how much I appreciate the work that you've done in Massachusetts. So I'm going to ask you a little bit more on that vein of questions about sort of what are your findings? What did you find out?
Overall, the number of deaths was relatively small. We had about 2,900 people released before the pandemic and a little over 1,500 during the pandemic. We call that during the pandemic. We didn't yet have after the pandemic. Potentially, that could be something that we could do in the future. And, you know, what we showed in the paper was there was a fairly modest increase in fatalities, but they were really, really small cells. I mean, it was
20 people had a fatal overdose, right?
Yeah, something like that. And
during the COVID time.
You know, and there was a threefold, there's an odds ratio of 3, which reached significance. Mm-hmm. There was no difference in non-fatal overdoses. Mm-hmm. And when we looked at MOUD receipt amongst the folks that we knew had gotten MOUD, there was no effect on fatalities. But we did show methadone had an effect on non-fatal overdoses and overall overdoses. Mm-hmm. So sort of interesting. And we sort of concluded that, yeah, there probably was a modest increase in fatal overdoses in those 3 months after release during COVID. But the number was really small. And we thought that it was really unlikely to explain what we were seeing in the community, which was a fairly dramatic increase in the number of overdoses, both fatal and non-fatal in the state.
Okay, so great. And then in Massachusetts or generally, what's changed since COVID?
Well, the programs we're working with have matured.
Mm-hmm.
They're treating more people and they're being more aggressive in terms of their treating. So the way the law was set up was that the mandate was you had to treat people who came in on one of the medications, they had to receive it, and you had to treat anybody who wanted the medication within, I think, 60 days of release.
Of exit.
Mm-hmm. But of course, a lot of people leave without you knowing when it's 60 days. They leave from court or whatever. And there were a huge number of folks who are sort of pre-trial who leave suddenly who didn't get anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are all the folks who are coming in on fentanyl / heroin who are getting detoxed.
Right.
So a lot of the jails started treating folks earlier, just basically everyone who came in, they offered it to them, whether they were on it or not.
Yeah. And anecdotally, some of the jail folks shared with us that because of these quick and early releases, because of COVID, meant fewer people were incarcerated in the jail, meaning they could maybe work on refining their program to treat this population. And maybe that created a little space for them to elaborate or refine or add to their program. And so I think we're seeing a little bit of that now.
Yeah, the census The census went down quite dramatically during the period of COVID. And I think in some of the jails, it started to come back, but we've had some discussion about this. It's still slightly lower, I think, than it was before COVID, but it probably will catch up over time.
Right.
How would you say that the jails responded to everything that was going on?
They had to quickly create some new protocols, like what do we do when someone is released kind of quickly? So these pretrial folks who are maybe released from court without much notice, that still is an occurrence that's happening now. But they have at least put in some new protocols in place, like the ability to give people bridge prescriptions or to recognize like this person's being released later today or tomorrow. We need to swiftly organize ourselves to give them linkage to care after jail release. So I wonder how much that came about because of this experience of having to adapt to COVID.
I mean, I imagine it had some impact because folks were being sent out pretty quickly.
Yes. Talk about organizational change, like on a dime.
Exactly.
That's what it felt like.
And what about other Massachusetts jails? Were there any other changes?
So other things, you know, a number of the other jails have started to, the non-pilot jails have adopted it. The legislature has come up with, what hasn't changed since COVID is we continue to have high rates of overdose. And even though I think initially the legislature was going to wait, or in the other jails were going to wait to see what the results were of this evaluation before deciding whether to expand the program, I think they've decided to expand it anyway.
Right.
So they produced some funding for the other sites to be able to do this. So that's been...
Yeah, we call them these later adopter jails. So they're working to implement the program now-ish, or they started in this year or so. And in a way, they are able to learn from our original cohort of jails who are a little further ahead on the implementation timeline. So that's part of now what we're doing. We're studying these later adopter jails to better understand what explains why they were later adopters, but also just understand how their implementation processes might be different than those who are part of the earlier cohort of jails.
Okay, so you've already talked about some of your really great findings. Do you have any more? Are there more things about this study or its sort of parent JCoin study that you think are super interesting that our listeners would like to hear about?
Well, I mean, we saw a modest increase in fatalities, but again, the rate, it was sort of a threefold, but it was based on very small numbers, and it really wasn't enough to really explain the dramatic increases that we saw in communities in Massachusetts.
Yeah. I think a finding that's more of a process-oriented one that's not from the research per se is that we demonstrated how we can pivot in the moment and work with our partners. We've cultivated these relationships that enabled us to answer this question that wasn't really a part of our original JCoin plan, but is an important one to examine. And so we were able to work with our partners to produce this paper, answer an important question, and in a pretty quick fashion.
Wow. Liz and Peter, that is spectacular. Such a statement about the importance of researcher-practitioner partnerships and such a strong statement about how Massachusetts works with researchers. I don't know what to say. I love it.
Yeah, just to give you a sense that, you know, in Massachusetts, overall, the rate of opioid-related overdose deaths went from 5% for the population in 2019, 2020, to about 9% during 2020, 2021, you know, and that's based on the overall population. And then I think, I'm trying to remember what it was in the, you know, overall in the US, they saw an increase of 20% of overdose deaths in the first year of the pandemic. And in the seven counties associated with our jails, the amount of opioid-related overdose deaths rose about 6%. It went from about 1,185 to 1,257 deaths over the same period. So fairly, you know, dramatic increases year over year. So that's what we found. And we're looking forward to getting the first bit of our data from the main data set together. And we're hoping we'll be able to look at some of the impacts of medications, on the outcomes. We've had a number of interesting papers come out on implementation, on the implementation, about diversion, about some other things that we've talked about.
We haven't had a chance yet to examine really our primary outcome, which is all about, you know, receipt of care after release from jail. So that's something we really are looking forward to investigating in this upcoming year. By working with the Public Health Data Warehouse and our partners at the Department of Public Health, you know, we hope to better understand to what extent do people demonstrate continuity of care after having been treated for opioid use disorder while incarcerated.
Thank you both so very, very much with all my heart for sharing your original study, your emergent study, and some of the findings that you've had so far with our listeners. I'm incredibly grateful for your time and for the passion that you both share for this work. Thank you.
Thank you, Danielle. Thank you, Jay Coyne.
Thank you, Nida.
Nida, the CTC.
I love the podcast. I do listen to it. I'm one of your more than 8,000 subscribers who regularly downloads and listens.
And we don't want to forget to thank our 7 jails and then now the other 6 that we're working with. So thanks to everyone and take care.
Bye.
That wraps another episode of the ACEDIT podcast. We thank you for listening to ACEDIT, where we translate science into sense. Also, remember, you can find one-page summary overviews written in plain language for all of the research we cover on this podcast on our website, jcoinctc.org. Our conveniently packaged research summaries may help you remember what you heard here, and they will help you translate this research to your staff, friends, students, or colleagues. ACEDIT is part of the NIDA-funded Justice Community Opioid Innovation Network, or JCOIN, through the Coordination and Translation Center, CTC, housed at the Center for Advancing Correctional Excellence, ACE, at George Mason University. Tune in again for more science and more sense with ACEDIT.